Okay, I was actually just looking at Cal Worthington commercials. That stuff is hilarious.
I'm assuming you're much younger than I, so you might not have been around when Cal Worthington did his thing.
Well, I've never been to California either, so without the internet, I'm not sure I ever would have discovered it.
I think he's still not like we want to go off on this tangent, but I think he's really old, and every now and then I actually see him doing a commercial, and I think he's still alive, or maybe he just died recently.
That's great. I love that stuff. I mean, that's sort of a, I don't know. There's a, it's like he's a archetypal car salesman or something. It's great.
Well, yeah, I think the reason why I liked him was he would always do these kind of surreal things, where he'd have a camel come out, and he said, "Here's my dog Spot," and then the next time he'd have like a porpoise, and he'd say, "Here's my dog Spot," and it was
Yeah, that sounds great.
anyway.
I didn't see those commercials. I only watched a couple, but I'm going to be looking at him a lot more often. I'm putting
Now I've got you.
Yeah, I'm actually putting together a radio show of just commercials, so that's going to be fun. But yeah, that actually could be one of my first questions. I've never been to Los Angeles, but the impression that I get is that it's much more immoral than the rest of the country. I mean, if somebody, pulls over their car in the middle of an expressway and blows their own brains out or something, you might see it on live television, rather, whereas a lot of other places they'll edit that out. Or
You don't see that where you are? What kind of country is this anyway?
that's a different kind of decline in moral values there. Just the facts.
The Romans did was what is it? Bread and circuses. So that's, I guess we take that to heart here, there's no if where we have the Christians being eaten by lions, and we'll be sitting and watch that.
Yeah, well, maybe there'll be a paradigm shift. Who knows? But so do you think Los Angeles is a fertile place for someone with your belief system? I mean,
Or lack thereof.
yeah.
I mean, it really suits me. It's funny, I've lived in a few other places, nice places, but I really somehow feel, I don't know whether it's I grew up here, but I do feel like it suits me pretty well. And I'm not sure why that is. We certainly have our freaks who believe the wacky things here, but I don't know what it is. It's just
But
this certain sense of everything's relative.
you've as far back as the early 90s at least, you were expressing your distaste for spirituality and things like that. Has there been a evolution of how you feel about things? Has it just been more refined? Have things changed at all about your perspective about the universe or lack thereof?
I hate to say that I haven't grown, but I have. I don't think I have very much. I think it's, and I kind of remember. I'm trying to remember the earliest point. I remember I was sitting with a friend, and I was managing this movie theater, and I was pretty fresh out of college, and I remember having heard this word nihilism, and this must have been mid-70s. And I said, and somehow we were talking about it, and I mentioned this word, and this girl was asking me about it, and I said, it's just you don't believe in anything, and I'd only heard it used in pejorative ways, like an insult of if somebody doesn't agree with you, they're called a nihilist, and Hitler was called a nihilist, and all this stuff, any destructive, and I just remember thinking, if you just look at the definition, that's pretty much what I am. And from then on, I just kind of thought, well, how can I kind of incorporate this into my, whether it's social criticism or something? or make it funny or something.
Yeah, you know, I've known of people that would refer to themselves as that, and you know, actually, you're the only person I know that pronounces it that way, which is funny. But
yeah, I think at some point I chose to because it sounded friendlier than nihilist. It's a marketing thing. But I remember it's a acceptable pronunciation.
Yeah, I've also asked people and say, it doesn't matter, of course. But, your story is particularly interesting because, you know, my first introduction to nihilism was I was at a venue that was at a bowling alley, and somebody said that they were a nihilist, and I said, "Oh, well, what does that mean? Does it mean that you go around doing vile things?" And they said, "Nope, it's just, you know, if I want to get across the street, sometimes if I want to get across the street bad enough, I'll jump over cars. It's no big deal." And I've not met a lot of people that, you know, make those steps. A lot of people are just sort of I don't want to project on other people, but sometimes it seems like a decorative thing more than a life style, I guess. But you've had the Nihilist Olympics, and you were having people do U-turns in the middle of traffic and other such risky things for personal amusement. Is that I mean, do you think that there's a self-destructive underpinning to nihilism, or is it?
If you really look at my life, I hate to like ruin your like image of me. I mean, in some ways, and I'm actually working on this video, and I'm trying to somehow, in some ways, my life is pretty mundane, and I, except I don't pay much attention to time, and I do get in my car at 1 when I know that they're cooking the French crullers up at the donut store, and I'll drive up and get them, or I'll leave the house at 2 and go get a taco or something. I mean, it's like really minor things, but otherwise, I mean, I live in a house, and I don't live in the gutter, and I don't live in the basement, and I don't know. And I have a job, but it's not a job that I find too unpleasant. So I enjoy it well enough. I don't know. I mean, you know, I compared to a lot of people, I live a pretty middle-class life. But I can, you know, in a way, it's kind of about a certain personal freedom. Like, you know, the people have beliefs so that they either can justify what they do or people relate to belief, either just people, all people, or particularly in this culture. It seems to be hurtful. It seems to be psychologically damaging. I mean, I just see people suffering under the burden of, you know, shame and guilt and trying to be, you know, well, I don't know, whatever they think their belief system tells them. And so in a way, it's kind of, or at least my public version of nihilism, me making art about nihilism, I think is kind of related to that, saying, kind of mocking that sort of approach to life. So, I mean, a lot of it is about humor. I find the things that people believe and their approach to belief kind of funny or stupid. So I...
Yeah, well, I've always felt that the opinions of people are always something that caters to their ego, and so for someone to have something that to have a belief system or lack thereof that doesn't paint them in some good light, whether they're alive or when they go to heaven or whatever. It would be conducive to a lot of things, and it's to some people it might be conducive to, you know, depression and things like that, but in other cases it's just something that's put behind, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, it feels freeing, it feels like judgmental. It feels, I don't know, somehow I feel lucky. I somehow, whatever it is in human nature that, like, builds the world around these moral codes, I'm glad I don't have that. Because I'm a mutant in that way.
Yeah, you've gone to an extent that I'm not aware of other people going. For instance, I understand that you don't have much of a concern for family and things like that. Do you think that that's sort of a codependent?
Yeah, the family thing. I have a family. I'm not mean to them, but the bonds people have with their family seem to be so painful for so many people. Whatever those interdependencies are, I don't know. Maybe grow older, maybe maybe the way I've changed is maybe I don't see it necessarily as me being smarter than other people that I don't do those things, but maybe that I'm some kind of mutation. I just don't have whatever that is that bonds to. I mean, I bond to my girlfriend, family all that much. I don't know.
So marriage is probably out of the question then.
You know, I was married once, I must admit. In the 70s, I met this girl, and one day I remember we were sitting around and saying, you know, wouldn't it be funny if we got married? And we just laughed and laughed, thinking about all the different people in our lives and how they'd respond to us telling them that we were getting married. And we did. We were married for like 6 years or something, and it was pretty funny.
Cool. Well, you're shattering all these images I had of you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was once married, but it wasn't necessarily about the same thing. Though, you know, I've been in these long-term relationships. I still have whatever that is that, you know.
Maybe it's an, I don't know, would you say it's an instinct to bond with the opposite sex or whatever sex, you know, is?
Yeah, in my case, the opposite. But maybe not for everybody. I know a lot of people who do not seem like couple material. But so, you know, I guess I feel like being a teacher for a living, I kind of do see the varieties in humans. And anyway, for me, there's a kind of a big part of my life to form attachments to somebody. But it's probably instinctual, but I think some people don't do that very much.
Okay, well, yeah, I actually just looked at, you were sharing something on Facebook about a podcast that denied the instincts to a certain degree. And I was wondering if you...
Oh, yeah, that thing I just posted.
Yeah, I looked at that like about 3 or 4 hours ago or something like that.
And did you listen to the podcast?
I didn't get a chance to. I did download it.
Very cool. I loved it. but it was not necessarily... The title of it is Don't Listen to Your Instincts. But the cool thing about it was how it kind of showed the evolution of instincts and how they can go wrong so often.
I was really interested in reading that. In hearing that because I've read a lot about evolution, and yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, over people being overweight and people being jealous over infidelity and things like that. I think those are all instinctual things from caveman times.
Uh-huh.
So maybe that podcast was right on par, but.
Do you want me to give you a little example from it? So they had these scientists who did this experiment, and apparently there's some birds who, and they did it a bunch with birds, who have this instinct, you know, to protect their eggs, and to choose the egg that's the biggest and most colorful. And so the scientists went in there and put like this beach ball in the nest. and the bird ignored their own eggs and started protecting this beach ball. And so that was just somehow analogous to what humans do quite often. Bigger and better, and, you know, the coding, whatever the instinct tells you to do, may not be literally what you're supposed to do, but anyway, I thought that was great. They did make analogies to humans.
Yeah, that's great. I remember reading somewhere that people thought that religion was a sort of thing that happens to people that have high levels of dopamine, and that religion is like a, sort of like a mental disease that people have from too high levels, chemical imbalance of dopamine or something like that. Is that how you might feel about religion, or?
You know, I don't really see that as necessarily pathological, because so many people do it. I think, I mean, in a way, it's like it is like the instinct for religion. I think there is some such a thing. I think normal humans, I guess it's like pattern seeking. They impose these patterns on the universe around them to make order out of it. This is just my interpretation of it. Uh-huh. And one way that they do that is to, for, you know, these stories that are related to religion. That's what, kind of, and but it just comes, I guess it's similar to that study that they were doing about instincts, because we have an instinct to somehow analyze the situation, to predict the future, to, you know, whatever, for survival. But it just gets twisted in this way of, I think we also have an instinct for hierarchies, too. And I guess not everybody has that instinct. But and I think the religion is really a reflection of our hierarchical instincts. We want to have a boss. We want to have a subordinate. We want to know who's in what position and what rules we're supposed to follow. And I think that, I mean, just from watching people, they seem to really do that.
Yeah, I have to look at, I can't really justify looking at people in any other way other than insects or some kind of a fungus or something like that. I mean, it's the only logical way to go about it. It makes things seem a lot easier, too.
But yeah, I don't necessarily look at in a negative way. It's not like I'm saying you guys are as dumb as insects, but
oh, no.
I can really see these all kind of in evolutionary terms. These kind of what seem to be pernicious behaviors.
Yeah, I didn't mean it to, you know, I can think of plenty other...
I think I'm the weird one. I mean, I can kind of see that. It's not like I think I have the answer for everybody, because I don't think my answer would work for everybody.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people just are wired not to think of going through life the way I do. And so, I don't know, I can't really say, oh, they're wrong and I'm right, even though it feels like that sometimes. So, I don't know. I just don't think it was my way would work for others. I don't know what you think. But to me, it seems that just the way those people are wired does not seem appealing at all.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I was thinking in terms of not people as derogatory beings, but I guess back to instinct. That would make a lot of sense in terms, you know, because I think that insects are purely instinct.
Yeah, there's not too much thinking going on, but they are acting the way they're wired to act. And I guess people are like that, and somehow I got broken in the process, not wired the right way. And I'm glad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a unique perspective, at least an irregular one.
Maybe it's evolutionary mutation.
Yeah.
But it's not like I'm going to breed more of me, because I've opted out of the gene pool.
Well, you know, I haven't seen the episode, but I guess that you had an episode of Nihilist's Corner where you were comparing nihilism to Buddha, or Zen or something like that. Do you find a lot of similarities there, or was it just for humor's sake?
No, I mean, it was funny. I mean, I had this Buddhist monk on, and we talked, and we agreed about some stuff and didn't agree about others. But, you know, he was like the first to, even though he's a practicing Buddhist, he was the first to acknowledge that Buddha said, and then he said, you know, that nothing is constant, and you're not supposed to, you know, worship the Bible or any, whatever the Buddhist version of that is. And all the things that I kind of point out about, you know, how about all these traditions and meditating and, you know, ringing the bells and lighting the incense. And he says, well, you know, people just do that because they like it, but it's not really essential to to what Buddha said.
It's funny because I actually practice meditation, and I've studied under a guy, and he was, I don't know, nice enough to say that it's not a religious thing, but uh-huh. he still also talks about cosmic consciousness and a unified field and stuff like that. But he's sort of admitted to me that it's basically that's just show.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, well, people, from my understanding, and I'm not an expert on Buddhism, but yeah, there's what Buddha said, and then there's the practices that I guess people developed over the years to help them accept the worldview that Buddha talked about. So his worldview was, you know, life is suffering, everything changes. Maybe you can figure out a way so that you won't suffer as much if you kind of go with it or something, or just don't expect whatever. And so I think all these practices are just ways of comforting. And because I guess as a nihilist, I'm thinking, well, sure, life is shit, or, you know, I'm not going to, you know, suffering and death, that's, what do you expect? I think that practices are just ways to make it, you know, less frightening to see the world that way.
The best of all possible worlds, right?
I'm not sure whether that's the Leibniz, the best of all possible worlds, or the my best of all possible worlds.
Well, you say that you like connecting with people when you're teaching and things like that. You would imagine that a person who is nihilistic would be a little bit more bitter or antisocial or something like that, but you know, you wouldn't imagine a nihilist to be a school teacher off the bat, I guess.
Yeah. Maybe. I'm not a bitter guy. I'm a pretty people. What are they? And I do kind of like people. I don't like belonging to groups. I don't like feeling part of a tribe. I don't like, buying into any sort of groupy sort of thing. But, you know, I enjoy people individually, and being a teacher, I kind of get to relate to my students individually and kind of figure them out. And I don't know. And, you know, I get what the alternative is, like be a salesman or something.
Yeah.
Just a lot more pleasant. You know, it's funny because, I mean, my job does involve helping people. And it's, people always challenge me on how can you be a nihilist if you're doing whatever. But, you know, just because, you know, it's because of whatever temperament I may have, it does not mean that it's meaningful. So if my temperament is, you know, I enjoy the company of others sometimes, that does not mean that I think that's meaningful. So they can be two separate things. I can just enjoy it.
Well, I've read your stories about childhood, and I have to ask, would you say that what you believe is solipsistic? just based on your own external reality, or I mean, not necessarily believing in it, but accepting what your external reality is somewhat solipsistic. For instance, you'd have to be proven otherwise.
I'm not quite sure what you mean. Solipsistic meaning like everything revolves around me, sort of.
Well, meaning that you only believe what your reality tells you. Like, even if you read something in a book or you see something on the news, you wouldn't necessarily believe it unless it's right in front of you. Yeah. Or even then, you know, you wouldn't believe your senses. But is it a self-serving sort of belief? I mean, because to an extent, you have to accept your reality as an unchanging thing.
Just a function.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, if somebody told you that the sky was going to be purple tomorrow, you'd only believe it when you see it, kind of a thing.
Kind of, yeah. You know, I don't know. I function pretty well in the world, and I don't feel like it contradicts the, you know, I don't know. I'm not quite sure how to answer that. If something, you know, it's kind of like if something works, that's fine. It does not have to be, I don't really care if it's cosmically true or important. I will just go with what's useful or functional at the time. I don't know if that's answering it.
This is 88.7 WLUW Chicago, and you're listening to an interview with mass media nihilist Elisha Shapiro on the Delirious Insomniac Freeform Radio Show. For more information, please feel free to visit nihilists.net or deliriousinsomniac.com. The Delirious Insomniac Freeform Radio Show is syndicated in Split, Croatia at radiokl.info on Wednesday evenings, 8 p.m. Central or 2 a.m. CET in Croatia. Okay, well, you know, I'm just kind of...
We have to get concrete.
I'm kind of curious how you feel about science. Do you think it's... the things that are unproven, can they be possible? I don't know. I think that a lot of science is based on too many hypotheses and, you know, if ghosts...
I have made comments about science being... a belief system also, and then I've gotten objections from scientific friends of mine who say, no, that's something you can believe in. And I don't know, maybe it's some of both. I mean, it's useful. I think that's mainly how I think of it, and not necessarily because it's some ultimate truth. And certainly things in science are unproven on a regular basis, and I kind of like the scientific process, just because it's, in a way, it's saying, okay, what we thought was true yesterday, we have found is not true today, and they're willing to go with that. They're not hanging on to something because yesterday they thought it was true. So that seems like reasonable to me.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. I'm curious about your guidelines for how you appreciate art, because I'm sure that there are certain conventional pieces of art that you like, but of course there's also, you know, Dadaism and probably surrealism and avant-garde and things like that. But do you appreciate things that people find meaning in? I guess is there a, you know, do you like Mona Lisa or something, or is it, you know, is it purely of a conceptual approach when you like art?
it's funny. I'm just looking around the art in my house, and there's nothing very conventional hanging on the wall. Let's see. My ex painted this picture I bought from her called Bug Bra and Fork, and it's lovely. You know the artist Becca. I bought a picture from her of this kind of pirate girl with a hook arm and a gun. She paints these really romantic pictures of girls with hook arms. I don't know. So I do kind of like offbeat art. I guess I feel like I guess it's like music. You know, I guess I'm kind of like screaming angry punk girls. I kind of like that. I don't like sweet music necessarily. I guess, you know, just look at the music I like.
I tend to like music for things that don't have to do too much with the emotions either. Something that's a little bit more visceral, I guess. But you also, you know, I guess you like Rolling Stones and things like that, but...
Blues, I kind of have an appeal, a bluesy sort of thing I grew up with. And Chuck Berry is so great. But then, I guess, I don't know, you know, the Muffs, you know, Dance, they're my favorite. I don't know why I like them so much, but...
I saw that about a year ago. I saw that episode that you put up. It was pretty evident that you were fond of that band.
Yeah, I'm gushing all over poor Kim. It's funny. So yeah, I don't know, the music I listen to, I kind of like Macy Gray for a while. Some of it's kind of got even some soul, a little bit of, I don't know. But yeah, I think I've turned into like a angry teenage girl. Kind of like, so that feels. I kind of like Nellie Mackay. Do you know her?
No, I can't say I do.
So I know sometimes I make my students listen to some of the music to demonstrate certain either irony or whatever it is, or point of view like that they're going to run into in maybe stories that they read. So yeah, Nellie Mackay is not angry and screaming, but she writes these really smart songs, and they're angry, but they sound very sweet and jazzy. So it's not necessarily the jangling, but I do like irony in my art and some kind of social commentary.
Yeah, I got the impression that at one point in time you were an artistic director for a gallery, maybe. Or maybe you were heading some kind of festival or something like that.
I do run the Nihilist Film Festival every year, and I do have to watch all these videos people sent in to me. And I was doing the comedy show at Highways for 6 months or something. Are these the things you're talking about?
I have a memory, you know, I didn't exactly look through your entire website in recent days, but I've, you know, periodically looked over it, and, you know, obviously it hasn't changed.
Right, yeah, I have not been updating it. I have a software problem. My new Mac won't run Dreamweaver, so I have to use my old Mac, and I don't turn it on very much.
I had an impression in my head that there was an art show that you did.
Oh yeah, with the Nihilist Art Festival.
Yeah,
that was like one of the early things that we did in the 70s, maybe 80s. We did just a couple of them. And we also made me and a couple of my ex-wife and my buddy at the time. We did the Nihilist Art Festival. And then we did the OK Magazine, which was like a Xerox art magazine, and back in that, a long time ago. How old are you?
I'm 30.
Okay, so yeah, before you were born. Or around the time you were born.
Yeah, I didn't know about you until about 1999 or so, so this is all just whatever was on your website, pretty much. But you... I remember something about there was a art party of some sort, and it was like there was a painting of a urinal, and somebody went and pissed on the painting.
Okay, yeah, I can tell you that story.
Yeah, I was just wondering if there was more of that. I don't know. I'm trying to remember if it's I'm trying to figure out if it's actually a real memory or, you know.
Yeah, that's actually from the Nihilist Olympics. One of the events in the Nihilist Olympics was the Art Defacement Competition, and it was named the something Art Defacement Competition, named after Laszlo Toth, because he was this guy who attacked the Pietà in the Vatican City with a sledgehammer, with a little sledgehammer. Hmm. And so we named this Art Defacement Competition after him. And so we set up this, and the Nihilist Olympics was pretty fun. What was it, 1984? And we got the parking lot somehow. I had a friend at Otis Art Institute, but not the people who ran it. So we had this, We had the competition was you bring a piece of art and you deface it, and the parking lot of Otis. And so one person brought his own painting and peed on it and set fire to it. And that was pretty good. I think he won. And I think he turned out, was that? That could have been a famous guy, or kind of famous. What was his name? To find that for you, because I think I just went to an art show of his. He died, but that doesn't mean that somebody, his wife, just had an art show about him. It was Bob Flanagan, I believe, who was this really cool performance artist who would hang himself by piercing his skin and hanging himself from the top of from the ceiling of a gallery. So he thought he was the guy who brought out, I think, his painting and peed on it and set fire to it. I hope I get that right. If not him, I apologize to the person who did it and not that. But Bob Flanagan was one of the people who participated in that art defacing competition. I think it was him.
Yeah, the 80s must have been an interesting time for you, because I've read about a lot of stuff where there was art showings where people would lock themselves underneath the floor of the art gallery, so people would be walking around in this empty art gallery and wonder what's happening while there's a person starving.
Right, that was Chris Burden. He did a lot of interesting stuff like that. A hero of ours.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff is really interesting to me. I guess there was someone who, as an art showing, just swallowed nails until they got blood poisoning and things like that. I mean, I'm very interested in that kind of thing, so I was just wondering if there was any stuff that's not on your website that you took part in as far as art, conceptual art goes.
I don't know.
Well, there isn't anything that's cool to me.
Nothing jumps to mind that's not on the website, but I was in a few people's other... I thought I'd be a writer when I graduated, and this was like in my one-man show I was just doing, called The Funniest Nihilist, which may come to a town or village near you. So when I graduated from college, I thought I'd be a writer, because I thought writers were cool. And I just started hanging around with these arty people in the 70s in L.A., and then in the 80s, and then they started, you know, they'd have me perform in their shows. And one of them was, I came out naked, and while I did a monologue, I did like a reverse striptease where I got dressed. And so that, I don't know, that's kind of conceptual.
Yeah.
It doesn't involve self-mutilation, I'm sorry.
No, that's great though, because, you know, I've seen your pictures, and apparently you have a part of a comedy sketch where you talk about how you get a lot of traffic because of these pictures.
Oh, naked pictures.
So yeah, that's funny that there's some continuity to that. You were in a play where you played Cupid too.
Oh, the picture of me is Cupid. Actually, that was when I was doing the Highways show, and it was like So every I was like the host. So every month I'd like try to do some sketch or bit involving, and that was like for Valentine's Day. I came out just as Cupid. I think one day I came out with a bonnet strapped with the underwear bomber guy. I did an underwear bomber thing. So I do a little sketches, whatever that month event would be. So that's why I was Cupid. I thought, and then people were just so disturbed at me. Where I have, see, here's a picture of me and Cupid. They were so confused by me wearing, seeing so much of my flesh. But I thought it would look like a Cupid outfit. I think I even had wings at some point. I had the bow and arrow anyway.
So what has comedy been like? Have you been getting good responses? Or because I think that there's a cross section of comedians that are definitely getting into the avant-garde more so than in past.
Yeah, well, that's what I did. When I did the show at Highways, it was because I was like seeing all these comedians who are really doing artsy stuff. And so I thought, well, these Highways, I don't know if you know, it's like a performance art venue in L.A. So that was the idea was, oh, I should bring these comedians to the performance art audience. And so I got to pick like the coolest, funnest L.A. comedians. And unfortunately, the performance art crowd didn't come out in large enough numbers to really make it worthwhile for the space. But I did have a really great comedians doing that show. There are very comedians who are really close to what we were doing in the art scene.
Does that coincide with? Is that the same thing as the art versus comedy SmackDown? Or is
that was that series of shows. So I'd have these. I'd actually have some performance art friends of mine do their funny performance art, and then I'd have these stand-up comics do their weird comedy stuff. And, so it was there. Great shows. I'm sorry more people didn't come.
Yeah, I would think that would pick up after a while, but
maybe in the future. Yeah. Maybe I was ahead of my time.
So with the Nihilist Olympics, did you have any other extensions of that? I mean, did the relay race ever happen? It seems like nobody wanted to do the relay race, but did anything else pick up? Was there?
Well, the most popular events were the Art Defacement competition we've mentioned. The U-turn competition was wildly popular. I think we probably had 80 people doing U-turns and being judged. The decathlon of housework was pretty popular. And we did do the Johanna Went Projectile Vomiting Marathon. And there are just a few people who I guess it was not everybody is up for that. And Johanna Went is this wonderful LA performance artist.
Wow. Yeah, I've got a cassette of hers, but I didn't know that she projectile vomited until I was looking at your site.
she did. Yeah, somehow stuff that looked like projectile vomiting. She'd have there would be bodily fluids involved and a lot of gross stuff. So yes, this was in honor of her, and there were a few people, but. Those are the main things. I think there was a bunch of other events. The run and shoot competition didn't really take off. And the freeway relay race, I don't think really happened either. And I don't know what else we had, but those were the main ones.
Did you run across police at all?
No. But you know that was funny. And the LA Weekly was, or so, a few people. I don't know whether this was in the Weekly or not. But somebody, some reporter, because it was heavily in the press, which I was kind of part of my concept. And so some reporter went to like police chief or some sergeant or some police high mucky muck, and said, "Have you heard about these this Nihilist Olympics and how they're going to do a U-turn competition?" And this was like whatever the article was. It was the sergeant laughed and then said, "Oh, the streets are not a play or something like that. That sounds dangerous. People shouldn't play in the traffic or something. And then he became serious, but he laughed. That's the important part.
Yeah, that's an artistic triumph.
Right. So that was according to the reporter, whoever that was.
Well, do you have any stories from the campaign trail when you were running for sheriff or field marshal?
Right, yes. I had three political campaigns. I ran for president first. And we had a couple of events, but the big one was the National Nihilist Convention here in L.A., and that was pretty fun. And then when I ran for sheriff, I had a couple of events, but I don't know, I think the most fun one was when I was in the Gay Pride Parade in Long Beach in my old ranchero in the back, waving with a big banner that said, Shapiro for Sheriff. let's see, what else? When I ran for governor, I did like a statewide campaign tour. I don't know, like five or six campaign stops from Sacramento to San Diego. And it was, so I just set up like little meet and greets and like little hippie coffee shops from in different towns. And that was fun. I was and I'd hand out little things, make little speeches, and show my little campaign video. Did you see my campaign video for governor?
I did.
Okay, so you got the idea. those pieces. I don't know if there anything too exciting happened, except, you know, a lot of these pieces, I kind of envisioned after the Olympics, and all the press I got, or while I was doing it, I realized that like my medium is mass media. So I could do these performances, and when they get written up, and like just general public reads about them in the newspaper, that's like my intended audience. And so that's kind of like, so I really like that stuff. When I get written up, and then I picture people reading about like this nihilist dude running for such and such, or doing the Olympics, or well, there's something else I did anyway. And I just think of me reaching people by having them read these articles and either laugh or be horrified. And I know that I'm reaching more people than I would if I were in a gallery.
Yeah, well, you seem to also have a passion for news clippings, you know, obviously because of your calendars.
Right, yeah. I find the media, you know, and the media has changed so much. I'm not sure I'm keeping up with it. I love people's, you know, what they read in the press, and I love the crazy articles that I get for the calendar, and just thinking of, you know, why people enjoy looking at those, reading those things about doing horrible things to children. There's certain categories for the nihilist calendar. People dying in awful or strange or funny ways. People doing awful things to children. Or, I don't know what the other, there are a couple of other categories. Or just public figures acting stupid. And they all are just so entertaining to me.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm putting you on the spot, but what would you say are some favorite news clippings? Because I've only got a few of your calendars. It seems like you've been around for at least 16 years with the calendars. Or something.
Yeah, I've been making those calendars for so long. Well, let's see, what can I have? I got my computer in front of me. Let's see, whether I can.
Well,
you want me to, I don't know, I hate dead time.
No, I can cut it out, no problem. It's not live,
okay.
So.
Eel swims up man's penis. So that's for this year. What else? There was an article about a new app for your. I'm just randomly picking the articles that I found for this year. I'm not sure I'll use all of them. For Android, you can get an app for your Android that tells you. It's a checklist to see if your son is gay. That's funny. Oh, I like the article about Dave Letterman being threatened by jihadists. Gerard Depardieu peeing on the plane is funny.
Do you collect all of those, or do you have fans that send you things?
I only have a couple of people who collect stuff for me, and so most of the I have a subscription to the Times, and so, but I started, now that the internet, I read so much more on the computer, that these newspapers are piling up in my dining room is really horrible. I hate throwing them away without reading them, but the LA Times has got much thinner, and they have a lot fewer stupid articles for me to use. So between that. So this, the thing about the collapse at the State Fair, I like stuff like that. Let's see. Anything about Michelle Bachmann eating a hot dog. Distraught man sets bathrobe ablaze in the Marriott. Bachmann eye, the stock collapse. Stuff that Rick Perry says. These are all things that will end up. Man charged with setting fire, poison dog, and slitting its throat. People doing horrible things to animals. I love my little kitty. I love animals, but something funny about people doing really awful things to animals.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it was you that had a clipping of somebody getting arrested for teaching their dog to Heil Hitler.
I thought you should clip that and send it to me.
Yeah, I should find it. I'm not sure.
Woman allegedly pulls baby from stroller, slams him against truck. See, that just reaffirms my conception of what people are like. That's why people, I'm laughing, not because I want the child to suffer, but because it confirms my my worldview.
Yeah, I mean, it does. It's an interesting reflection on the human psychology that people are interested in. Basically, more or less, that stuff sells. It's interesting to me. But you've always had these different themes. There was I think one that I had in the early 2000s was the theme of the calendar was globalization.
Right.
And there was perversity, humor, and I think, did you say that next year's is in honor of self-promotion?
It was going to be, but then I reserved the prerogative to change the theme. So this year it's the faces of God, which I think I sent you the cover. So yeah, I couldn't think of anything to put on the self-promotion one. So I just went with those visuals of different cartoon characters, which I think represent different faces of God.
Cool.
So I'm not sure.
You've been doing that since 1983, right?
Yes.
Wow. There's something to be said about that. The
longevity, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Are you I know that you're interested in conceptual art. Do you listen to experimental music at all?
I don't know. I tried listening to this podcast, which I don't know whether that counts. But no, I don't think I'm much of a experimental music aficionado. I'm not that knowledgeable about it. It's a little abstract for me, and that's... not smart enough, maybe, to get it. I know you're a musician.
Well, yeah. I mean, I like experimental music, but I like a lot of different styles of music. And people find an expression. Some people find that they express nihilism through making a noisy racket. And so I was curious.
I guess I kind of like that. I do kind of like punky sort of stuff, but I don't know what. And there was all those, what is it? I don't know what year. There was the period where I kind of got into rock and roll more and less into to blues, and that was more like Elvis Costello and those guys. But no, I don't know. I have a friend. What's his name? I can't remember. Hold on while I feed my cat.
Can I ask what your cat's name is?
It's a stupid story, but Buffy. Buffy is her name. And then probably inspired, well, actually my girlfriend, probably former girlfriend now, she had a cat, and before she lived with me, her cat was named Buff, or she called it Buff, and I thought, oh, well, that reminds me of Buffy the Vampire Killer, and so I named my cat Buffy, because she was kind of big and kind of a fat cat. So, and then my girlfriend moved in with me, and it turned out her cat's name was really Buffy. And so then we had two Buffies. But a little confusing for a while.
It's a good background for a cat's name.
Anyway, yeah. Carl Stone, does he sound familiar?
Carl Stone?
Yeah.
No, I can't say.
Experimental music, that's why.
I mean, there's just so much of it that I guess I can't. And I don't know, he's probably been around for a while, but I can't say I've heard of it.
We went to high school together, that's how come I know him. Huh. But he's like a experimental music dude. But I guess not what you listen to, that's fine. So yeah, my cat's name's Buffy, I'm sorry, she doesn't have a cooler name.
No, I was just curious, that's all. I mean, you know, this is, you must be very good at press kits or something.
Yeah, I had a job for a while writing press releases for the city of Inglewood. So I did develop some skill in that. And I do write a funny press release.
What other jobs did you have before you were a teacher?
I was a reporter in a newspaper. Right straight out of college, I managed the Newart Movie Theater, which was like the hip, cool movie theater at the time. I was like an assistant manager. And then I got a job being a reporter in a little newspaper, and then I got a job writing press releases for the city of Inglewood, Parks and Rec. And then I got a job tutoring English at Santa Monica College, and then I got a job teaching English. So it's not that many jobs, actually, for a guy as old as me.
Wow.
And then I've been teaching at Santa Monica College for like 30 years.
Wow. I mean, I'm only 30, and I've had like 49 jobs, so that's...
I see. Well, before, while I was still in college, I say I washed dishes, and I worked at McDonald's, and I... Anyway, not too many jobs.
Huh.
I guess, see, you'd think a nihilist would be... flakier and more transient than I. But there you go.
Yeah, that's another thing that's surprising.
Well, you know, the reason I've stayed at Santa Monica College is the people I work with are not unpleasant. And so I guess I know enough that working for unpleasant people is not fun.
Yeah.
So I just was stuck with, felt lucky to get what I got.
I remember somebody telling me that you live in what you would call a nihilist compound, or a nihilist compound.
Oh, you know, we used to, when me and my wife and my friend Molly rented an apartment together, we called it the Cooperative Nihilist Housing Project, because we thought that was funny. So that was as close as we came to a nihilist compound. And it was a very cute old building, the Cooperative Nihilist Housing Project. But it was just the three of us living in an apartment.
Cool.
But I guess think part of my art is to make up fancier names for what I do to make it sound like an institution rather than just one guy doing some wacky stuff.
Well, you've got a good aesthetic, at least. I mean, I don't know. There are probably people that think you're really crazy. So, how many guns do you own?
Two.
Well, I mean, I don't know if there are legal issues about California to ask those
questions. No, I don't think I've got. There are two actual guns, which I don't think which have been in my closet for at least 10 years. They're mainly props, but they are actually functioning guns, and a lot of toy guns that look like real guns.
Wow, cool.
That I guess I haven't been taking pictures for a long time. I guess I just move on to some other medium. But I do love photography. I've been meaning to go back and do some more photography.
Yeah, I do really like your photography. It has a good grain to it. I assume it must be analog, so I'd wonder what you would do in the digital realm.
I did love doing the photography, and I do have pictures I enjoy sitting on my desktop, but I guess I've just been distracted by other things. But hopefully one day I'll get back and take more pictures. I bought some film for my Nikon while they still made it, and but I never got to it. I thought I did, you know, the shaved naked pictures.
Yeah.
I thought, well, you know, now I'm like 20 years older now. I really do need to do like the before and after pictures. Me standing naked there. As long as I have pictures of me 20 years ago naked, I might as well compare them to me now.
Is that spot still a vacant desert, or? I mean, I'm not sure if it was a vacant lot or if it was a desert, but
there were a couple of them. There was one that was actually out in the desert, and there was one that's a vacant lot in downtown LA. I'm standing on train tracks. I don't know if you can see the train tracks, but the desert was actually, I think, out in Palm Springs-ish area. So it's probably still a desert. I don't know.
Huh. Well, that's something to look forward to.
It'd be nice. I don't know. But it is so much more fun standing on stage and telling jokes after my fashion. So I don't know. But I do. I did like photography. That is a medium. I do art for them. I like looking at them.
Give them away to people. Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. And we talked for too long. I'm tired now.
Well, I've gone for like 2.5-3 hours before, but I understand. I actually am surprised we went as long as we did. But thank you.
It was nice talking to you. Thanks for the interest. And let me send. Okay. Anyway, thanks very much. It was nice meeting you. And I guess we'll be in touch.
Yeah, sure thing. Thank you. Thanks for staying up. I hope I didn't drive you nuts with, you know, bore you to tears with this big long thing. But
I guess I just talked. Anyway, great. I'll talk to you another time.
Okay. Take care.
Okay. Bye.